This is KQEN Local Talk at 4. Every weekday, News Radio 1240 KQEN brings you local information at 4 o'clock. Now, the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show from Wintergreen Nursery Landscaping and Florist. Here's the Commissioner of Dirt, Mike Winters, and the Mike Winters Lawn and Garden Show on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, hello there. We're at 406, and welcome back, stranger.
Yeah, it's been a year or so since I've been here, you know.
Yeah, it's somewhere, at least.
Yeah, at least a year. I mean, two Wednesdays in a row, two holidays on Wednesday.
Woo-hoo. I think we left you hanging up in a maple tree.
I think so. I mean, that was like a paid vacation almost. You know, I thought, man, I got a little antsy, and I went, wait, no, they're closed on Christmas Day and New Year's Day. I don't have to sweat nothing.
There you go.
Well, I hope everybody's good for the new year and you're enjoying all the rain because we sure do need it. And
we're going to get some snow later, they tell us.
When?
Tuesday and Wednesday.
Oh, yeah, right. I'll believe it when I see it falling out of the sky.
Okay.
Thanks for listening. If you have any questions, you can call and ask at 673-4464. But, you know, when it's raining like this and ugly and wet and cold and all that kind of stuff, you ought to save your questions up till the sun comes back out. You know, just think of what you want to ask and then just have a whole string of them and ask them all at once, like in February or March.
Yeah, you can take the whole show that way.
Yeah, we'll take the whole show out, you know. But, you know, spring is coming in about 90 days or so. You know, I mean, 90 days, that's not very much.
Yeah, ain't very far.
You know. And so, at any rate, this year's first show is probably going to be repetitious to a lot of you folks that have listened to me for the last 15 years or whatever that I've been on this thing. And but there's always new people tuning in. And
well, we hope so.
I'm sure they are, because they tell me they are.
Oh, okay.
Yeah, there are 400 or 500 show up at the nursery and tell me, yeah, I'm new. I want to hear your show again. It's okay. But at any rate, there's some things that need to be repeated, because sometimes folks don't get them down the first time they hear them, or even maybe the second time. And so, you know, it's worth repeating and talking about, because they are important items of your landscape. And I'm going to talk about the weather a little bit and the rain a little bit and bare root tree season that's going to be starting at the end of the month. And, you know, there's lots of stuff on the agenda. So, but, you know, water is, you know, important to our landscapes to keep them healthy and growing. But most folks have a tendency to overwater. Yeah, I know you've never heard me say that before.
Oh, never.
Never. And the main reason for overwatering is a general lack of knowledge of what a plant needs. Or another reason is that you don't know your soil. You haven't done any soil testing or digging or sampling or something like that to see, you know, do you have a solid clay base? And if so, it's going to have poor drainage. And so if you sock the water to something that you planted, it's probably going to suffocate and drown because the ground's too wet and it can't grow. And those are things, if you're real, like if you have a brand new home and it's just bare soil out there, prior to planting anything, prior to even planning on what you want to do to the landscape, you got to go out and dig some holes, you know, about a foot deep or maybe 18 inches if you're really energetic that day, and just see how the water drains out of that. Now, if it's not raining, you take a couple of gallons of water and throw it in the hole and time it. See if it actually drains within, you know, 3 minutes or 33 minutes. It's it'll tell you a lot about what type of soil amendments you need, what type of plants that you're able to plant in there and have survive. it's really important. Water is good, but too much water is really bad during the growing season. Another reason you might consider is that sprinkler systems, they take care of the job for us, so we don't pay attention to the, you know, how often does that sprinkler come on and how many minutes do I have it on? Oh, did I forget? Or is the timer broken and it stayed on for 4 hours? And why is there 2 inches of water in my on my lawn and in my planting beds? Those are the things prior to spring that you need to test. If you have an automatic water system, you just go in there and into the box, into the controller box, flip the switch, and look, actually look at the heads operation. See how much time actually, you know, the box might say it's supposed to be on for 20 minutes. And so you start timing it and you find out that the puppy didn't shut off for 45 minutes. Well, if that's the case, you need to readjust it or get a new timer, control box, or, you know, in some way or another, you want to cut back on that 45-minute watering time and do it where it's supposed to be done. Or do the number of days per week. You're supposedly only supposed to come on, say, Monday, Thursday, and Sunday, or Monday, Thursday, and Saturday, or something like that. And for some reason, it keeps coming on every day. Well, you might have a disconnect in your valve system. You might have a disconnect in your controller. So there's a lot of reasons. And I know it's not fun right now when it's pouring rain and it's cold outside to go out and check those things. But, you know, by mid-February, we have, you know, a few good days, and the sun will shine and it won't be raining. You know, flip the switch. See what the heck's happening. Just remember this. Too much water is not good on your plants, on your lawn, on anything. It does more damage than good. So, you know, it's very critical. What's most critical, I guess, is knowing what that water holding capacity of your soil is. And that's, like I say, dig a hole or two in various parts of the yard and actually see, does that water drain? There was a job I did, one of my very first landscape jobs. It was in Winston. And I've told the story before, but the ground was so hard I had to pick it, even with a pick. And I was in my 20s. Even with a pick, I couldn't hardly penetrate. And I got down a couple of inches, and I said, "This is crazy." So I thought, I'll be smart. I'll fill these little holes up with water. Come back in the morning, and they'll be you know, nice and soft.
Yeah.
Which I did, and you know, I picked them some more because the water had actually soaked down in there. Mm. But when I picked some more, the water had only penetrated about 2 or 3 inches, and it was hard as a rock again. So those are the kinds of soil catastrophes waiting to happen, because you buy a brand new whatever, azalea, rhododendron, or a juniper,
right,
and try to plant it in there, and the next thing you know, why are the leaves turning brown and falling off?
You figure it out, it's dead.
Yeah, exactly. And rather than blame the nursery, or the place where you bought the plant from, check the soil first. Make sure that that soilable is usable and doable and will help your plant materials survive rather than just rot in the ground with a puddle of water around the base. So basic knowledge, like I say, of your soil is all you need. Just figure it out. And if you can't figure it out, there's guys like me out there who can help you figure it out. And I'm not the only one in town. You could probably call anywhere of a half a dozen landscape contractors that have been around for a while and actually know what they're doing and say, "Hey, I would like you to do a kind of a soil test and tell me about the drainage and tell me what the soil needs before I spend a few thousand bucks on plants and trying to make my yard good." It will save you a lot of frustration, money, and anguish in the spring and summer.
It might even save your marriage.
Yeah, it would save your marriage, and it certainly would save you money, you know. So that basic knowledge, you know, is it going to work? Is it draining? If it's draining, hey, you're good to go. And if it's not draining, get that junk out of there, set it aside, put it, make a brick wall out of it somewhere, and fill the hole with some good soil. And then when you do that, if it's a bad draining situation, you need to make the holes super large so that the plant materials, when they do start to root out, that the roots can go somewhere. It's got room to grow. And as it has room to grow and matures and becomes stabilized, it can actually work. The root systems can actually work themselves into the bad soil over time. Not very quickly, but at least they've got a good base from which to start. Now, I think that makes a lot of sense, and I know it does because I've done it 10,000 times, and
it works.
Yeah. So save some money and frustration. You know, clay soil, you know, it drains very slowly or not at all sometimes, and it's. You need some organic material in there, whether it's a lawn. Even with a lawn, you can plant grass. You can plant grass on on clay. It'll grow, kind of, but it won't be healthy. Lawns need preparation as well, and you can if you can till up the existing soil and then add some compost material to it, maybe 2 or 3 or 4 inches of it, and blend that all together. Then you put in your lawn, whether it's sod or seed, it doesn't matter. Then the root systems can penetrate a ways down there and establish themselves and won't dry out on a hot July or August day. If you're irrigating properly and, you know, fertilizing properly, you're way ahead. And some of those, when I say organic material that needs to be amended into the soil, you can do bark mulch, old bark mulch tilled in, peat moss, which is more expensive than old bark mulch, potting soil, which is even more expensive than peat moss.
What is peat moss?
Peat moss, in swampy areas, over a billion years or 1,000 years or whatever it takes, the vegetation, the material that falls out of trees, the leaves and the twigs and stuff like that, they get into a kind of a swampy kind of thing, and this stuff just breaks down and compacts. And you've seen a bale of peat moss, so you know how you got to tear it apart to shred it up.
Right.
It's pretty spendy stuff, and it has its uses, but you don't want to try to, if you got a halfway decent-sized lawn you want to put in, peat moss is probably one of the most expensive things you can use as a soil amendment.
Yeah.
In planting beds and in planting holes, with like you're doing geraniums or fuchsias or whatever, you know, a bale of peat moss would make a lot of sense to mix it with, you know, some good soil.
Yeah.
But to do a big lawn, it's like the fine grind bark mulch. It'll go a long ways, and you'll get a lot more mileage out of it, and it won't disintegrate, and it's a whole lot cheaper.
Disintegrates. I always wondered what it was.
Yeah. There's natural peat moss bogs, or peat bogs, and then they excavate them like they're mining them. You know, a lot of it in Canada, a lot of it in upper Midwest, you know, those kinds of places. Mm-hmm. I don't know of any peat bogs around here. There might be some, but I'm not aware of them.
Yeah.
And but it's a big seller at all nurseries. And
I thought it was named somebody's moss. And
Pete's moss. Yeah. But any of that stuff, even sand, if you took sand and tilled it into clay, the sand, a sand particle is the largest soil particle. If you take a particle of sand, an individual, and look at it in a microscope, it'll be 20 times larger than a clay particle. So that's why the clay compacts, because it's so small. But you take sand, which has sharp edges, and you till it in together, it breaks up the clay. So even if you did, you know, if you did all three or all two, it would really be a nice soil bed. And you can plant just about anything you want in there. So that's how that works.
Take that, Douglas County.
Yeah, so there, Douglas County.
But we got to take a break.
Oh, a break? Oh,
break,
man.
Already.
I'm on a roll, man.
I know it. Keep that rolling going.
I'm going. I'm leaving.
We'll be back on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Well, we are back. It's 4:22 on this Wednesday. We were talking about peat moss and all kinds of good stuff.
All kinds of soil amendments and things like that. And if you have a question, 673-4464, and I'll answer it, or at least make an honest attempt.
There you go.
Yeah.
And there's no waiting.
No waiting, right. And so where are you people?
Yeah. Wake up.
But anyway, I've been talking about drainage and mixing the ingredients that are available to us in Douglas County to make your soil better. to make your plants survivable, and you'll be, like I say, a lot happier and dollars ahead, and won't have to redo it two or three times to make sure it actually grows. Just remember, clay soil does not drain well. Plants will die. They will not, if you overwater them, they drowns them. It rots the roots. So that's why a lot of things don't grow well when you don't amend the soil. So anyway, this time of year, the bare root tree season is upon us. That means, bare root means there's the trees are not in pots. The roots are bare. They're also about half price what you would regularly pay for a potted tree, say in May or June or August or September. Because a potted tree, you've got the price of the pot, you've got the price of the soil, you've got the price of the labor, you've got the price of the fertilization and water and blah, blah, blah. It all adds up. So if, let's say you saw a nice maple tree that you wanted and last year and it was potted up and it was maybe $79.95, well, you can get a bare root for about $25. So that's, maybe 30.
Yeah, well, that's just depends. A bargain.
Yeah, it is a bargain. And, you take them out of the, we put them in lines, and then we put sawdust over them, or chips. And you just look at the line of trees, and you say, yeah, I'll take the third one there and the fourth one. And we just pull them right out of the sawdust. There's the roots. They're dormant. Nothing happens to them. It's rainy. It's cold. It's wet. They're asleep. And, as long as you plant them correctly, you can take them home. You don't have to plant them in the next 5 minutes. You can sit them in a place and make sure that the roots don't dry out. Put a wet blanket over them, something like that. Keep them outside, lay them down. They're easy to handle. And, you can see, well, this is how big the root system is. This is how wide it is from tip to tip. You don't want to crunch the roots up. You want to dig a large enough hole that everything fits comfortably. And you can put the good soil in, like I was saying, and work it into the roots, and voila, you're done. And in a few
months. Sounds simple, but
it is simple.
I bet I could mess it up.
No, you couldn't. Not if you came and I showed you.
Okay.
Trust me. Trust me.
I do.
Oh, boy. But this is the season because they're bare, and they're roots, and they're dormant, and they're asleep, and you can't hurt them. And they won't wake up till about maybe the middle of March or the 1st of March, depending on the weather, of course.
That's a good time to wake up.
Yeah, it's March already. Gosh, time to get up. But it's kind of interesting. This year, right now, we're way below our annual precipitation average by about 10 inches, nine
wow,
and a half, 10
that
inches.
Much?
Oh, yeah. And it depends on where you're at, but it's right in there for most of southern Oregon.
That's not good.
No, it's not. And that's another segment that I'm going to speak about a little bit later here.
Okay.
About watering. I might not get to it today. Who knows? But bare root trees and shrubs, and we basically specialize in the trees. They're just not in pots. But they got a full root system. The soil conditions and the planting techniques are critical. And as I spoke in the last segment, the critical part is putting in good soil so that the water can drain, the roots can grow. And if the soil is has a lot of organic material in it, it's not chunky, hard, and full of rocks, the root systems grow very quickly, and they'll do a good job. That's the name of the game there. They'll do it. You don't have to worry about it. Just put it in and stand back and watch. and bare root trees are less expensive than a potted plant simply because there's not as much material, labor, and all that kind of stuff that are invested into it. Like I say, they're probably about half the price or close to half the price of a potted plant. Mm-hmm. And they're light and they're easy to handle. So, you come in and you say you want those three fruit trees and you can pick up all three of them all at once and take them out to your pickup truck or whatever and put them in a back seat. And there's not a lot of stress and strain there. And if you're like wanting a mini orchard, well, you got to say a big backyard or a big front yard and you always wanted fruit trees, now's a good time because we'll have, at least 100 different 100 trees, fruit trees.
Good selection.
There'll be, you know, four or five different kinds of apples, three or four different kinds of cherries. We have Asian pears and regular pears and plums. And, you know, there it is. You can see them. And the trees, you'll see a lot of trees. There's like Rite Aid's got trees. They're about 3.5-4 feet tall. Mm-hmm. Well, those are the leftovers that they get out of the field, and they bag them up, and they're cheap. They're inexpensive, and I can make them grow, and a good tree, a good gardener can make them grow, but they're small. Whereas our fruit trees, let's say they average 7-8 feet in height. And they have a nice straight trunk.
Start.
Yeah, nice straight trunk and well branched and all that kind of stuff. They're ready to go. And you can actually get some fruit the first year. Not very many, but, you know, two or three apples. The only ones I don't care for and like, even though we sell them, are peaches. Because peaches in our area are hard to grow for the non-professional orchard guy.
Yeah.
I've planted a few out in my field, and I even had bad luck with them, and I couldn't figure it out. And so we've
just
made
not
the determination.
The type of climate or something.
It's the soil, it's the climate, it's the bugs, it's the peach leaf curl.
They don't like it.
Somehow they're susceptible to all these things, and it's so much easier to just go to Brosai or Cruises and get a big old wooden lug of peaches,
right.
And you got all the peaches you want, man, or Safeway, you know,
and not all that expensive,
and not a hassle, and they're good. So, but if you want a mini orchard, now's the time to think about, what do I want? You know, what kind of apples are available? You know, and the apples and the fruit trees that we get from growers come from the state of Oregon. They're not out of
Washington.
Nebraska or Washington or California. They're out of the Willamette Valley. And the Willamette Valley to us is, you know, real similar weather conditions. There might be a little bit better soil quality in the Willamette Valley, not as much clay content,
right.
That kind of thing. But it's still, the similarities are good. And the selection is wide. I was counting this one grower I buy from every year. You know, you get this his sheet of all the stuff that's available, and I thought, well, you know, I counted how many apple varieties he had. He had 37 apple varieties.
Wow.
Yeah, and some of them I don't even know what they are, for crying out loud. You know,
why would you need that many?
Well, because actually, I guess there's a demand. I don't know. You know, to have a good variety.
An apple is an apple.
Well, yeah, some are round, some are oblong, some are red, some are green, some are yellow.
That's true.
You know, and quite honestly, when I eat an apple, a Red Delicious or something, and it tastes good and it's well done, and then you eat another one, there's a similarity of taste there that I can't differentiate between one or the other. If you blindfolded me and said, take a bite of this apple, tell me what it is, and they'll chew that up. Now take a bite of this apple and tell me what it is. I probably couldn't do it.
Right?
You know,
it's like Pepsi and Coke.
Yeah, exactly. Exactly. But anyway, we are, you know, if you got the mini orchard, or if you want shade trees, you want to cool your property off. You got a brand new home and there's not a tree on the lot. Well, hey, plant a few of those things. Plant them on the south side, the west side, so that they'll produce shade for you and cool off your property in time. And, you know, there's the July and August rolls around and you don't think of it right now, but it can be 100 degrees for quite a few days and a lot of 90 degree days, and it's good to have a little extra coolness hanging around the yard.
You bet.
And you know, as time goes by, they grow, they look good, and they add value to your home. They cool your property down a degree or two, I'm not sure. But if the whole neighborhood plants a lot of those trees in no time at all, you know, what's this across the, is that Ridgewood?
Across Laurel.
Laurelwood.
Laurelwood.
Right?
Yeah.
Okay. Yeah, that is probably one of the nicest, most nicely treed neighborhoods in Roseburg. But the houses are really old, mm-hmm. and they planted a lot of old trees many, many years ago. And then there's some old oaks and stuff that have been around there forever. But you drive down there on a summer day, you can actually feel. You get off Harvard, you take a right, and you go back down there, and it's at least 5 degrees cooler in that neighborhood than it is on Harvard, simply because of the shade trees.
Yeah.
And that means less air conditioning that you got to run, so mm-hmm. less electricity, and your bill is smaller. So those are different things that people don't think about all the time.
Nine times out of ten, they keep their grass pretty green, too.
Yeah, they do, because of the shade. They don't have to water as much, and the soil is not bad up there. It's I've got a few clients up there that I've worked with, and the soil is, you know, fairly decent because that's an old floodplain, actually.
Oh, is it?
You know, from way, way back, you know, from 200 years ago when there were big floods with, you know.
It is right there on the river.
Yes, yeah, right. And it's kind of flat in there. So, but bare root tree season or shrub season lasts as long as the weather is cool and rainy. By mid-April, bare root season usually is over because the spring is in full swing at that point. And, you know, you get some 70, 80-degree days. But I got a story for you here. A little later, I might I might do that. But we bring in like a few hundred fruit and shade trees the end of January so that there's a good selection. Also, the trees we sell are, again, grown in Oregon. So they're climatized to our areas. You can't go wrong. And our fruit trees are semi-dwarf. That means they don't grow to 40 feet tall. They will fit in your average size yard. And if you prune them and keep them at a reasonable size, they never get out of whack, they never get out of control, and the more you prune, the more productive they get, and they look good, they add some shade, and you know, a semi-dwarf is a good size. Then there are dwarf trees that supposedly only get about 8 feet, but they'll exceed that. And a semi-dwarf is supposed to get, you know, 15 to 18. Sometimes they get a little higher than that, but you shouldn't have them that high. I keep all mine at about 8 feet max, and they're wide. But they're no taller than 8 feet tall because I don't want to get up on a big stinking ladder and be picking fruit or spraying, you know?
Right.
Yeah, so keep them pruned.
That makes sense.
Yeah, we got a what?
A break.
Okay.
All right, we'll be back.
I'll be back. We'll all be back.
Mike's got a story he wants to share.
Oh, I got a lot of them, but I don't know if we have 5 hours. And Gladys might not like it.
I gotta leave it alone.
You better.
News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Hey, good afternoon once again. 4:38. Mike and I are swapping stories about our stock market.
Yeah, we've done exceptionally well, haven't we? Oh, God. Well, thank you for listening. And if you want to ask me a question, 673-4464 on any part of what I've spoken about or what I haven't spoken about. So we're good to go. I've been talking about bare root trees. I've been talking about soil amending and how to make things grow and actually survive. And I was just kind of finishing up with the semi-dwarf fruit trees in case you wanted an orchard. One thing about the fruit trees, too, some of them need a pollinizer. So if you now a yellow delicious apple is like one of the main pollinizers for any other type of apple. And then there and it's also self-pollinating. So if you got a red delicious or you get a yellow delicious and they cross pollinate and you get a lot of production. Then we have some specialty trees like these apples. They have four different apples grafted onto the same trunk. So you can have a red, a yellow, and a couple of others all on the same tree. And they do well around here.
Do they?
Yeah. And I've got several planted at my house, and they're doing okay. And I don't take care of them very well at all. Mm-hmm. They're just kind of stuck up there by, kind of at the base of the hill. And I go, oh yeah, I ought to water those once in a while. And watered them in a month, and they're still alive.
They're still
and
so there.
I just give them 5 gallons of water and they're good for another month or so. But grafted apples, four-way grafted, and we don't sell a lot of them, but they're kind of a neat tree because each variety has a different colored flower, slightly different, and each variety, of course, has a slightly different looking fruit, different tasting fruit. And it's meant to not supply your family's needs for apples forever, but you'll always have some variety there out in the yard. And, your company comes over and says, what kind of apple tree is that? It's got four different apples on it. Yeah, this, and this. You can give them an education right there.
Yeah, got it one apple at a time.
That's right, one apple at a time. And like I was saying, semi-dwarf is what we sell. Simply because they work well around here. We do have some dwarfs once in a while, but most folks want a little bit bigger tree than a dwarf apple. They make a nice potted tree, but eventually they grow out of their pot too. But it's important to learn, and I've spoken about this 100 times, what keeps a fruit tree productive. There's pruning, spraying, fertilizing, and proper watering. And if you keep those all in balance and in good soil, guess what? It's productive. And the pruning really is an important thing because you don't want to have about 100 branches in there when 10 will do that are widespread so that the air can circulate around the branches. You have less fungus and scale and bugs and things like that. And the sun can shine on the fruit that is produced and it ripens more evenly and nicely. So, that's just the simple stuff. And if there are books out there in the market with photos in them, shows you how to prune, shows you what to do, shows you how much to do it. And if you keep on top of that, you'll have more apples than what you can eat or your family can eat. So, and oftentimes with bare root trees, people think, well, they're not going to produce for 3 or 4 years. Well, I'll tell you, if you treat them right, they'll produce the first year. Not very many, and then the second year you'll have twice as many, and the third year you have twice as many as that. So, it's a doable thing. And as long as you keep them pruned and sprayed, there's lime sulfur. We spray our trees with lime sulfur in the wintertime when it's not raining, and that just kind of smothers all the fungus and bacteria that might have picked your tree as a Home Depot, spray them a couple of times when it's not raining, and like I say, give them a good shot of fertilizer the first part of the spring, and you're good to go. And when you do fertilizer, just don't do the cheapest thing you can find out there. Get some top quality. Pay a few bucks, and you'll see the results from it. And a slow-release fertilizer is the best because that way it releases into the soil, into the root system a little bit at a time and lasts a whole lot longer that way. And usually you only have to do about the first 3 years fertilization, unless you're a commercial grower, you probably do it more. But after that tree has been in the ground for 3 years, it has a good root system, it's stretching out, it's getting into areas where the soil is fertile. You may have to fertilize a little bit more, but usually you don't. And they're established, so they can pretty much go on their own. And as I've said many times before, trees will grow in spite of us, not because of us. And one thing I learned years ago was that bare root trees can thrive in green sawdust. You'll read literature about the mulch or the sawdust or whatever that you have that you use to plant stuff with, etc., needs to be aged and old and because of this and this. Well, I learned many years ago that they can thrive in green sawdust as well, with you know, it's just good. At the end of the season, well, probably 25 years ago, at the end of one of my bare root tree seasons, I had no money left to, in my budget at that time to buy a bunch of pots to pot up these trees for the summer. And I thought, oh, well, you know, as the season goes by, I'll have the money to buy the pots, because I had like 100 trees stuck in the sawdust in lines. So there they are. So I left them in the sawdust, and I have a sprinkler system there. So they got watered as the leaves came on, and I fertilized them right in the sawdust, figuring that it can't hurt them. Mm-hmm. And then they began to leaf out. They were healthy. They were green. And they grew quite nicely, and I kept growing them into the summer. I thought, well, shoot.
Just leave them there.
Yeah, just leave them there. Why mess with them now? Don't disturb those puppies.
Yeah.
By that time, I had the money for the pots, and so I thought, I'll just wait till the fall, and mm-hmm. when the fall comes, when they're dormant again, I'll just go ahead and pot them up. Well, here's the deal. I had a client who wanted an orchard that year, and it was July, and it was hot, and the only trees I had were in that sawdust. And I thought, oh, geez, how am I going to do this? So I pulled one up just to see what the roots were like, and I was amazed at the size and the mass of roots that had grown in that sawdust. It was like 10 times the root system when we healed them in. Yeah. You just put them in a row, and you cover them up with the sawdust. Well, here it was July, and I pulled one out as an experiment, and it was amazing. And they had leaves all over them, and I thought, oh, geez. So I thought, well, I'll come up with a plan.
Yeah.
So we went out there, and we pre-dug all the holes. This guy wanted 48 trees in his orchard. And I thought, okay.
That's a pretty good number.
That was a pretty good number, yeah. I thought, what the heck are you going to do? So anyway, we pre-dug all the holes. We left the trees in the sawdust. We got all the holes ready, got the soil next to the holes. The holes were big enough, ready to go. And from the orchard, and they had the good soil mix right next to the hole. So I went back to the nursery, and then I laid about a foot of bark mulch in the bed of my truck, and I soaked the bark down, just hosed it down so it was saturated. Mm-hmm. Then we lifted the trees and laid them down, and then covered the roots up with another foot of wet bark, and I added vitamin B1 to the mix. And so that's how we transported them. So we drive into the orchard and go down between the rows and besides each planting hole, and we quickly pulled out each tree from the truck and planted it in hole. It was ready to go. They didn't even know they were moved. It didn't even wilt, and it was, you know, in the 90 degrees.
Wow.
Yeah, and I thought, hey, this is better than what the book says. And then we filled each hole with our vitamin B1 mix, which is a root enhancer, and it takes away the transplant shock. And we had them all planted in a few hours. And the bare roots were exposed to that July heat for less than a minute, you know, from the truck to the hole, and bingo, and grew out there, and we'd get them all done. All of those trees grew. Every one of them.
Great.
Not one died.
Wow.
And from that experience, I learned how tough trees really are. And if you treat them with any respect, any knowledge at all, they're going to make it. You know, you can't just rip them out and throw them on the pavement for 2 hours and go swimming and come back and expect them to you know, grow when you plant them.
Yeah.
So that's why we make sure we give all of our customers, all of our customers planting instructions. I mean, every customer I speak to, when I'm selling them a pine tree or an apple tree or an avocado, for crying out loud, you know, and we'll sum it up here. One, the size of the planting hole is important. Don't skimp. The soil mix is important. Watering in with B1, which I said is a root enhancer. It takes away the transplant shock. Fertilizing, pruning, spraying, and long-term care. If you'll do that, and like I say, and we tell them, and I tell them, don't overwater. You know, don't overwater.
Never,
I say that 10,000 times a year. You're overwatering. Quit it, please. They'll be okay.
Stop.
And if they follow our instructions, they're going to have success with anything they plant. Guarantee it. That's all there is to it. I've only planted, you know, I don't know. I don't want to say a million items, but
probably pretty close.
Hundreds of thousands of things I've planted in the course of my professional career, and like I've said in the past, in the at my house, I have not heavy clay soil, but it's not perfect topsoil out at my home place, and I amend that soil a little bit. But I just watch the shrub or the tree that we put in, mm-hmm. and I just watch it. And of course, I give it the B1 treatment and all that kind of stuff. But, you know, prior to the next watering, I'll dig down in there and see. If it's damp, I don't mess with it. And sometimes it might be 3 weeks between watering, you know, if it's June. And I feel any moisture in her, mm-hmm. I know that 10 inches or 15 inches down where the roots are, it's wet.
Yeah.
So don't mess with it. And when I do water, I water significantly. I've got a couple of 5-gallon buckets I towed up from the creek because the trees I'm talking about are out kind of scattered on the property there. Mm-hmm. And
in the outback.
Yeah, and I'll pour 2.5 gallons on this one and 2.5 gallons on that one, and then come back and redo it one more time. And they're good for 3 weeks a month. And then you get into September when things are beginning to go dormant. Hey, don't mess with them at all. Let them go dormant. Let them harden up for winter, if you will.
Yeah.
Certainly you wouldn't want to water them in October. That doesn't make any sense. It's a waste of your time, waste of your water. And they do really, really well. What are you reaching for here?
Well, I'm reaching for this.
Oh, Aunt Gladys.
Well, Aunt Gladys, hang in there. We'll be right back. News Radio 1240 KQEN.
This is KQEN Local Talk at 4 on News Radio 1240 KQEN.
Here we are, 4:53, and the afternoon report in a few minutes. Right now we're Mike Winters.
Yeah, we're going to wrap it up here real quick. And my point for harping on water use, one of my points is because as a society in general, we use too much water on our landscapes in general. More than is necessary.
Yeah.
This year, our water year is shaping up to be another dry year, unless it continues to rain through June. And if everyone is conscious of water use and waste, we'll survive, and so will our landscapes. But at the last time I checked, our rainfall average was about 10 inches below normal for this time of year.
And wow.
That's a lot of inches. I mean, you'd have to have some fairly strong, resilient storms roll in here to make up for that deficit. Coupled with the last, you know, 5 to 6 years where some of the years were a little bit below average and that kind of thing. So it's an accumulative effect.
Mm-hmm.
And same way with the soil being over saturated. If you had two very wet winters in a row and snowpack in between, then your soil moisture is going to be a whole lot higher. And I'm talking about soil moisture that's down, you know, 4, 5, 10, 15 feet, that kind of stuff. That's why I want to bring everybody aware of how you're going to water and how much you're going to actually use and not to waste it. And
don't water the sidewalk.
Yeah, don't water the sidewalk. Boy, that drives me nuts.
Me too.
I go through town and I'll see some, and most of them are commercial mm-hmm. establishments. They have a small strip of grass out in front of their establishment, and it's July and it's 106 and the water is on at 2 in the afternoon,
mm-hmm.
and most of the water is shooting in the street or shooting on the sidewalk.
Yeah.
Nobody goes out and adjusts it. Nobody turns it down. You know, these little pop-up sprinklers, they have a little set screw on top. And you take a little screwdriver, and if it's shooting 8 feet, you can make it, you can turn it a few turns and have it only shoot 4 feet or 3 feet. Just to cover what you're trying to get. Not the sidewalk and not Garden Valley Boulevard or Stevens Street.
You're not running a car wash.
No, you're not running a car wash. And that water, all that does is goes down the drain and the storm drain back out into the river and down. And you haven't really done anything good for your grass or your shrubs because it's so stinking hot that most of that water evaporates right into the air. It doesn't even hit the ground. It just evaporates, and so consequently, you're paying, $200 a month for watering your shrubs, and you're getting $10 worth of service out of it because because you're watering at the wrong time and the wrong amounts, and you don't need to. So, be conscious of it, and that's why periodic checks in your soil around your home or business. That's a good idea. It's like. Does my car need an oil change? Well, I've only gone 28,000 miles on this one change. Maybe we could stand another one.
Yeah, maybe.
Well, the same thing with your shrubs, and your trees. Just check on them. Established trees, don't worry about them. Established shrubs, I've got roadies at my home that I water maybe twice a month in the hottest part of the summer. They do fine. Unless the leaves are actually drooping and look soggy and like they're just going to fall off, don't water them. If they're standing up and looking
perky.
Forget it. They got enough moisture. That's your indicator. Just look at the leaves. don't overdo it.
If they got a smiley face, leave them alone.
Right. So and one of the reasons I'm so adamant about this is I live at my home. I live on spring water. I have a spring that I developed years ago. It's 1,000 feet up the canyon. I have gravity flow water to my house. There were some dry years when my kids were growing up. And, 5-minute shower max. Just get in there and scrub up and rinse off and get out. So we all can take a shower, And so that became a habit. And consequently, we always had enough water for showers, baths, dishes.
Laundry.
Exactly. Had we been wasteful and just let it run and take a 20-minute shower singing in the shower, we would have been out, period. So that gave me a real
appreciation
and pay attention attitude to what I have available and what's the best use of that water. And I don't have a water bill, but if it goes dry, I'm up a creek. with no water in it.
So. What kind of creek?
No. we'll let that one go by. So even though you're on Umpqua Basin or whatever water district you're on, just like I say, check your sprinklers for leaks or breaks. When you turn them on the spring, see that they're working properly. If they need to be adjusted, hey, adjust them. If you don't know how to adjust them, call somebody who does, and they'll adjust them for you so that you get you the best bang for the buck and actually get the water on the things you want it to get on. And why pay those exorbitant water bills if you don't have to? I had one client that said, hey, Mike, I think something's wrong with my sprinkler system. This is a year or two ago. We checked it out. Nothing. We went through zone by zone by zone by zone. Well, found out that they had a hole in their swimming pool, and that's where the water was leaking, and they have one of those, self-filler uppers.
Yeah.
Yeah, right.
Oh, no.
And finally, I think the pool company found the leak, and it was quite expensive.
Oh, I bet.
They were using a couple 100,000 gallons of water a month. Yeah.
Thanks.
So, with that, I wish everybody a happy new year. Get your questions ready. I'll be ready next week to answer them, and thank you for listening.
And where are you located in Winston?
Oh, in Winston. We're on Highway 99, south of Winston. Look for the big green roofs. You can't miss us. We're on the left going south.
All right. Welcome back.
Thank you.